Chapter 21. On Saturday, I stare at the tribe's billboard on my way through downtown. Despair drops anchor in the pit of my stomach. The left side has "Never Forget" in white letters on a dark background. Heather's senior picture, along with her description and the phone number for tribal police, fills the other half. It isn't until I pass by that I notice the outline of the twin towers behind the bold lettering. They had meant to never forget about 9/11. Two separate posters. Heather's mom looked rough last night on TV. Hard living and more than one stint in county jail. She claimed the police weren't doing enough to look for her daughter. I make a mental note to ask Jamie or Ron if anything can be done to increase the search efforts. On Sugar Island, I head south and east until the asphalt ends. The Jeep rocks side to side on the uneven dirt road beyond. "Whoa, good pony," I say, patting the dashboard when I park. Taking my cue from John C.'s masterpiece of organization, I have a backpack with clear storage bags, a roll of tan masking tape for making labels, and a black Sharpie. I've also packed a map of the island, folded so the panel shows only Duck Island, along with bottled water, latex gloves, bug dope, red cotton yarn, tiny scissors, a digital camera, and a notebook with a pen tethered by a yarn leash to its spiral binding. On my walk to the narrow section of land that makes Duck Island a peninsula instead of an actual island, I come upon the caretaker's cabin on the preserve. I halt. A memory washes over me like a gentle rain. My dad, carrying me on his shoulders as he hiked past the cabin to his best secret fishing spot on Duck Lake. I want to stand here and blink until he's next to me. I hear John Z's voice instead. "Get to work, sis. You're burning daylight." Somewhere on Duck Island, Uncle David found a unique variety of mushroom. To explore the area methodically, I decide to view it as the torso of a body getting a CAT scan. I stand at the southeastern side of the peninsula at the edge of Lake George and tie a snip of red yarn around a birch tree to mark my starting point. I take 10 paces north along the shoreline and mark another tree with yarn. The average person's stride is about 30 inches, but since I have such long legs, my strides are probably closer to a full yard. So my cross sections will be 30 feet deep for the width of the island east to west. Cutting through the middle of Duck Island, I reach Duck Lake to the west. I head south until I'm at the narrow starting point of the peninsula and mark the first tree. Marking 10 paces north along the shore of Duck Lake, I establish my northwestern boundary. I'd canvass the section, looking for the damp places, soil or soft wood, where mushrooms grow. When I find something, I take pictures, log it in my notebook, and collect a sample in a sandwich bag. Later, I'll look up each sample in the three mushroom encyclopedias that were among Uncle David's books. Mom had me add all of his books to the library at the big house after we emptied his apartment. In addition to my uncle's reference books, I found a mushroom foraging website that is searchable by location or species. My goal is to find something that hasn't been cataloged. I'm not looking for a match, rather for the absence of a match. Donis, we don't prove a hypothesis is true. We search for evidence to disprove a null hypothesis. Uncle David's voice is as clear as if he's walking behind me. He taught me so much. I can follow in his footsteps, do what he would have done. Is it wrong to be excited about a research project that has so much at stake? The woods are medicinal, engaging all my senses and connecting me to something timeless, like being in the zone, except I'm not running. Leaves flutter to the ground, critters scurry nearby, the scents of pine, cedar, and moss mixing together. When I complete the first section, I begin again with 10 paces north along Lake George. I explore Duck Island in cross sections for the rest of the morning. I take an early afternoon break to eat some cheese and crackers and a juicy Honeycrisp apple. I check my watch. My mother thinks I'm studying all day at the university library. My plan is to do a few more sections before I go home and look up today's samples. Tomorrow, I'll come back as soon as Mom leaves for Sunday Mass and put in more hours. I take 10 paces north and mark a tree. There's a patch of pansies just beyond my boundary. Yellow with purple markings or with their coloring reversed. Grandma Pearl gathered these vivid flowers. She mixed them with melted bear grease as an ointment for my dad's eczema. I drank tea made from dried petals she kept in a coffee tin. She boiled purple petals to use as a dye for the strips of black ash that would be twisted into the weaving for a colorful accent in her baskets. I've always liked pansies. When I did my coming-of-age fast, it rained the entire time. It stopped only once, enough for me to take in the woods surrounding the large boulder where I huddled, which was like the hull of an overturned boat. There was a patch of colorful pansies, and their markings looked like little faces. When the rain returned, I went back under my tarp. I imagined them as spirit helpers keeping me company. Something black darts past, a raven pausing to rest on a small boulder at the water's edge beyond the pansies. I recall Macy's story at the bonfire. The way I heard the story from Grandma Pearl, Gagage was always making mischief when Creator handed out gifts. What will I do? Oh, why was I so naughty? How can I ever find my purpose? Gagage visited Makwa to see if he could learn her ways, but he grew bored. All she did was lumber through the woods finding medicines. He flew away and observed each of his friends using their gifts. Again, he scolded himself for being naughty and missing out on receiving his own gift. One day, as he was flying around, he heard Ajidamu crying in a hole in an oak tree surrounded by the acorns he had collected. "What is the matter, Ajidamu? I am sad and have no joy for anything I once loved doing. Maybe you should go see Makwa. She knows about medicines. Maybe there is a tea she can make for you. Come with me. I will take you there." Gagage led Ajidamu to Makwa. Sure enough, Makwa had the right medicine for him. A pleased feeling came over Gagage as he flew away. He kept going until he came upon Wabus, crying. "What is the matter, Wabus? I cannot relax as long as that sly Wagosh is trying to eat me." "But Wabus, Creator gifted you long ears and quick feet. You can hear things that others cannot. No one moves more quickly than you. You will have a head start on Wagosh if you honor your gifts." "That is true," said Wabus. "Mi gwich, Niji." As he flew away, Gagage had that good feeling again. He had spent so much time flying around, watching his friends using their gifts, that he had come to know their strengths and how they might help one another in their time of need. And that is how Gagage discovered that his gift was in solving problems. I'm smiling when I approach the black bird on the small black boulder. "And how will you help me, Gagage?" I ask quietly. The smell hits me when I realize something is just beyond the boulder along the shore. A body. Pulling my sweatshirt to cover my nose, I take hesitant steps aligned with my shallow, halting breaths. I reach the boulder and peer around. Eyelids still half open, eyes gone, pecked or nibbled. I stumble backward. "It doesn't smell like dead body." How would Johnsy know what a dead body smelled like? Because rotting flesh is unlike anything else. I know that I, too, will never forget the smell of Heather Noden's body.